Welcome to Career Tools. This week, early openings in a rising market, something I bet you didn't know. Here we go. Folks, we've changed the way we offer licenses to our written materials and to our online digital tools. You now no longer have to buy Manager Tools or Career Tools individually. So now you get both of them together. You essentially double the amount of material you get. Annual costs are going up from $165 a year to $200 a year, and monthly prices are going from $15 to $20 a year, so clearly not doubling, and less than what we sell now for if you were going to get a joint license deal. We believe strongly that licensing is the way to go for the vast majority of people. We have over 4,000 pages of material, and it's much easier to read something when you really need a quick response rather than having to listen to me again. So the questions this cast answers are, what opportunities are there in a rising market? What downsides are there, and this is what people don't know, to those early openings? And what questions should I ask specifically about those early openings once I have an offer? So we've talked about this before, and you and I are both surprised, I guess, but we shouldn't be because we deal with this stuff every day, but we're surprised that people aren't aware of it. But openings that come open early when things start getting better, and this is early 2014 and things are starting to get better, may have some dangers associated with them, right?
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, if you buy cars a lot, you know what to look for and whether or not a car is dodgy. If you buy, you know, if you're in the law, you know what to look for in contracts. And it just happens that you and I are in the employment market and we happen to know what to look for. And they're pretty simple things to us, but...
Well, what's funny about that, you say we're in the employment market, so is everybody else. They want to be employed too, right?
Yeah.
But it goes to the Christmas rule that the employment market is those times between jobs, right? And people like staying in jobs that they like. So people are in the market, but just aren't aware of what's happening around them because it doesn't seem to affect them. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the important things that I don't think people realize, or they only realize it if they think it through, is that the market isn't homogenous. There is no employment market that covers the whole of the US or the whole of the world, which, you know, if you read the media, you know, job losses are happening all over the world,
right?
Which is true. But there's also places where there's geographic places where there's shortages. For instance, in the middle at the top of America, there's, I don't know what, there's some states up there, they need people.
Folks, every once in a while, Wendy asked me a question like, Kansas, is that in the middle or in the west part? Which, to be fair, if you're in the States, you're probably going, oh, that's funny. But then if I said, where's Buckinghamshire, you wouldn't have any clue. Or where are the Cotswolds, you wouldn't know that in England. Or for that matter, the difference between the Loire Valley and Burgundy in France, or Bordeaux for that matter. Yeah, things are different. And you're right. And right now, because of the energy boom in the U.S. I think actually this year the U.S. is a net exporter of energy, which surprises a lot of people because they're not aware of the kind of markets that actually affect their company. But that said, yes, Montana and North Dakota up there, they're drilling for oil and they're finding it. And they have unemployment rates that are so low that they're essentially unsustainable. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's a geographic example, an industry example, and a skill area example, because there is some skill. Even for the guys that are out, you know, building the rigs, those are dangerous jobs that you need skill for.
Something else too is that, I'm recording this from my home in Fredericksburg, and you're in San Antonio. If I were to drive from San Antonio to Austin, Texas, on I-35, two of the 30 largest cities in the United States, I'm pretty sure, at least in terms of metropolitan statistical areas, they are. And I compare my experience, a random walk, if you will, north up I-35, to a reporter. A reporter in San Antonio or Austin would go to a couple of major companies because those companies have public relations people, and they would get some quotes. And those reporters would talk about what their experience is and attempt to encourage people to apply to their company. On the other hand, there are companies that are what I would consider to be off the grid, although that's an overstatement, that are family-run, that maybe $500 million companies. They're private. No one ever hears about them. And or they're business-to-business companies. They make pipe fittings for large industrial companies that sell pipe supplies, or they make housing materials that get sold to housing companies that build houses for people, and no one knows about them. They're, of course, included in the statistics because they're required to report to the government here to help the government make the right investments. But the fact is, nobody knows about them. And this goes back to the fundamental thing I always say, which is there is no family living 20 miles north of Wichita, Kansas, with 2.1 kids. The joke there, folks, is that I don't know that it's actually 20 miles north of Wichita, but there is a geographic center to the United States, and there is an average family. The problem is it doesn't exist. It's a statistical ephemera. It doesn't actually exist, but we talk about it to help us understand what's happening. But your point is that no one has a normal search, but everybody searches together, short and long, across the country and local, changing industries or not, getting a promotion or not. All that adds in together, and thinking about what the marketplace is actually is a negative. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it's not helping you to read the newspapers and see that it's all doom and gloom, and no, you know, there's unemployment rates here that are really high, because that might not be true in your geographic area or your industry or your skills. And so if you want to leave your job, then there are opportunities. Ignore what the newspaper says. There's opportunities.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Each industry, each geography will warm up at different rates. And eventually all of them will become warmer. And these are the questions that you want to be asking.
Yeah. So as your market, or as a market that someone's interested in, begins to warm up, what do they need to be looking out for? What's the hidden danger we want to share with them?
Okay, so the question you want to ask is, why would someone be leaving this job, the job you're looking at?
Right.
What risks are there in me leaving my current job? And then ask specific questions about managerial style.
Ooh, okay, yeah. Although you don't do this until after you have an offer, I assume?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Late in the process.
Yeah, unlike that, the bit that somebody sent me, it may have been you that sent me about, here's how you interview your boss. No, it wasn't you. It came through. It was a response to Things I Think. And somebody said, here's a major news outlet saying how to interview your boss during the interview. Really?
Oh, that's, I remember that one.
Yeah. And here's a small caliber pistol. Yeah. Okay. So why, you make the point, why would someone be leaving this job? Why?
Okay. So this is the most important. If you only ask this question of yourself.
Right. Of yourself in early stages when markets are beginning to warm. This is a specific thing built around the market warming now. Okay, good.
So the market has been cold for 5 years. And stale, and people haven't been moving because they've been scared of unemployment and the lack of opportunities, and they've taken the devil they know over the devil they don't.
Yeah. They've taken a paycheck. Yeah.
Yeah. So the moment the market warms up, they've handed their notice in and they're going somewhere else. That tells you something about that job, that it might not be the greatest job in the world. If the moment you can escape, you're escaping, does that say something about the place you're escaping from, essentially? I mean, there are good reasons. They might feel like, I've stayed here because, you know, I needed the paycheck for my family and I've accomplished everything I can and now I'm ready to move. But there's also bad reasons, like bad bosses that they want to escape from. They know the company isn't going to rise with the tide. The working conditions aren't good. There's no growth opportunities, whatever those things. And you have to do some research in order to find out what the between the lines answer to why would that company have a vacancy.
Yeah. So what we're saying here, folks, is if somebody's leaving a job really early, if there's an opening really early, they may very well have been desperate to get out of that job, and the first glimmer of a chance that the market is warming up, they've left. And we find that there's a higher likelihood that there is a significant hidden problem associated with that job, and usually it's the boss, although it can be other things. And because so many people that are so excited when they get an offer don't ask questions about the job. They don't recognize that control flips to them when they have a job and now it's time for them to ask questions without being offensive about them. What ends up happening is we see a lot of people who end up with disappointing transitions early on in a market, because they're so desperate after a fashion to go somewhere new that they do less due diligence, and those early jobs tend to need more due diligence. So it's a double whammy, and you've got to look out for it. Okay.
Yeah. So early in the market, when the market changes, the likelihood is higher that they're leaving for bad reasons, because a reasonable person, which is a legal term for us, people in general, a reasonable person would wait another 6 to 9 months until there were more opportunities. They wouldn't just take any opportunity. They'd be right waiting for the right opportunity.
Yeah, so we're not making a black and white distinction. All early openings are bad. We're just saying there's a higher predominance of risk associated with the choices one would make early on in a warming up market.
And clearly you can't say to a manager, are you a bad manager? So you're going to have to work your network.
Really, I was kind of hoping I could. I figured they'd be honest. I mean, all managers are honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the next question we have is what risks are there in me leaving my current job?
Yeah. So one of the things we said when we did the soccer model of demonstrating decision-making or helping other people make decisions is one of the categories always has to be the status quo or the status quo. and staying is always a possibility.
Yes.
Most people say, okay, so I've decided to leave, so staying isn't a possibility, but it's better if you include it as the possibilities.
Yes.
As one of the possibilities. It's possible that as the market warms up, there will be more opportunities where you are. It's possible
by definition.
The salaries will increase. You might be able to move to a different division or move to a different role. If your boss is the one who's making your life miserable, do you get the feeling that he might leave it?
Right.
In which case you might get someone else.
Or as more opportunities present themselves, there's a greater chance that you won't be working for him or her.
Yeah, that too.
This brings up something we've talked about before in a cast called the downturn rite of passage. One of the things that you have to be careful of, that this podcast guidance is the flip side of, is the downturn rite of passage, folks, is if you have stayed with a company and it went up and then it started to go down, the market started to go down and the company started to struggle, and you left, and you have a series of jobs where when things started to go south, you left, you have a slight weakness on your resume for executive level positions, because executives are supposed to perform their best, actually, in down markets to minimize risk. Part of the way they do that is race don't chase, which is another one of our casts. So sometimes people leave and avoid the downturn, and then the perception is, this person won't be able to make it through a downturn when they're responsible for $100 million in revenue or budget or what have you. By the same token, if you've gone through the downturn with somebody and you start thinking about leaving, we're not saying you're wrong at all. We trust you to make your own good decisions. We're trying to help you avoid the potential pitfall that most people don't see. The problem is you're comparing the upside that this other company is talking to you about, because things are starting to warm up, hey, more opportunities and so on and so forth, you're comparing that with the previous year where you've been. Well, the previous year where you've been is probably a lot like, to some degree, the previous year where you're going.
Yeah.
And what you ought to be comparing it to is not the previous year where you've been, but the next year where you've been. And there will probably be more opportunities, all things being equal. And of course, you would know that better than us. But you need to compare the upside that your new company that's wooing you is talking about with the potential upside that your company is offering. If your company is suddenly making more offers, then they believe there'll be more opportunities. And we're not trying to talk you out of the move, because it can be an excellent time to make a move. It can be. There's just these risks we want to share with you. But if you go to the new company, you're the newest person. And there's the old last in, first out kind of thing, where you don't have the credibility that other people that are in your role have. You don't have the relationships. When you change companies, you lose goodwill, of course, which I believe we've talked about in a couple of casts previously. Whereas sticking through it, knowing people, knowing things that are happening in your company will probably make it easier for you to get promoted, or you would assume so, compared to a brand new hire at your company at your level. You assume that. Well, what that means, if you're the brand new hire at the new company you're going to, the people who you're going to be peers with assume that they have an inside track. That's a risk of leaving your current job. And again, we want you to leave if that's what you believe is the right thing to do for you and your spouse and your kids and your career and so on. We just want you to be fully informed when you do it. Now, you mentioned to me about friction, right?
Yeah, the idea of friction is the same as the idea of goodwill.
Yeah, it's the opposite of it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So friction is reduced when you've worked somewhere for a while. You know how to get things done. You know your team. You know your customers. Your family is accustomed to the times you leave and the times you come back. And you know how to live on your current salary, even if you wish it were more. So when you're considering moving and you're thinking of the benefits, one of the things you've got to weigh up is you're going to lose all of that. You're not going to know the people. You're not right. going to know the customers. Your family's got to adjust to a different, you know, if you've got a different commute, or if you always come home at lunchtime and you're not going to be able to, or you're going to be at work later. It takes the family a while to get used to that, especially if you've got kids to drop off and those kind of things. So when you see an offer and you think, hey, it's like an extra 20 grand and you get very excited by it, and oh, it's got the manager in the title, is that worth all of the things that you're going to lose?
Yeah.
And only you can decide that.
It might very well be. And if it is, we're thrilled for you. And you should know what those things are.
If there's positive signs that your company will be able to take advantage of the rising market, and you suspect that jumping ship, the other people in the industry jumping ship early is a sign of bad things in their companies, then the risk of moving now rather than 6 to 9 months has just gone way up.
Yeah, it's gone up. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's talk about asking those questions about managerial style, because this is delicate, right?
It is. So when you've decided to interview, and remember, interviewing is not the same as accepting an offer. You can interview, but you don't have to accept the offer.
Yeah, there are two parts to every job search: getting offers and taking offers. I have a friend right now who's struggling with, well, I'm not sure that that's right for me. And I said, well, go interview, get an offer, and then learn more. And this person, he said, I can't know enough. I said, no, of course not. You're not supposed to know enough. Right now, they don't know enough about you. That's what the interview's for. They're in control right now. Until they find out enough about you, they won't make you an offer. And then you're at a standoff. On the other hand, if you interview, you'll learn more during the interview process. And if you don't get an offer, this entire discussion is moot. But you'll have certainly got some preparation for other companies. You'll have polished yourself up a little bit. Not that that's a reason to go interview. But then in addition, now, if you do get an offer, you're in control. And you can ask some questions that are, provided you do it delicately, provided you do it professionally, will help you decide. And frankly, if you don't get enough information and you still have doubts, walk away. That's okay. Say, I just don't feel like it's a fit. And by the way, when the company goes, gee, we're really surprised, we thought you'd loved us. I mean, how many times has a candidate said that to a company? And the company said, yeah, well, sorry, we want to keep interviewing. We think you're wonderful, maybe someday, but right? It's completely reasonable for you to do that. And you're not burning a bridge when you do that.
No, you got to stop thinking about jobs as rare diamonds and start thinking about them as secondhand cars.
Yes.
You know, they're something that you have to ask a lot of questions about in order to be sure. There's no guarantee of purity like there is with diamonds.
Yeah. And the key is to ask it in a way that says, I'm not scared, I'm not doubting you, but rather, I'm an intelligent consumer. You took hours to ask me questions. If I say yes, I want to feel good about this. And if I say yes, I'm going to know what I'm getting into and I'm going to be all in. Rather than saying yes because I'm excited and then in 90 days going, dear me, I've got a problem here. And I got to tell you, you start thinking about quitting in 90 or 180 days, the company's going to say we weren't hiding anything. And then the burden's on you.
So one of the things you want to know is, if this is the boss that everybody is leaving, which you can't ask directly. So something like, what's the turnover been like in this team? Or how many people have moved on to better opportunities in the last couple of years? What have the opportunities been like? The boss will probably consider those people to have moved on to better opportunities rather than left him on account of his management style.
Yeah.
And again, a bad boss isn't necessarily a reason not to take a job.
Exactly.
If the experience or the salary or whatever it is that you want in your life right this minute.
If it's perfect, if it's perfectly aligned. Yeah.
If it outweighs a bad boss, you can live with a bad boss for like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And who knows that he'll be there for 2 to 3 years.
And you knowing in advance makes you have a different experience than discovering what you've gotten into 6 months later.
Yeah. And then some other behavioral questions so that you can get examples. So can you tell me how you handle communication around here? Can you give me an example of how you handle conflict of resources? Can you give me an example of how you've developed a particular staff person?
Yeah. And in fact, in that one, say, can you give me an example of somebody on the team that you've worked with to help improve their skills? And look, it's completely okay for that boss to say, we are going 90 miles an hour here. It's not every man for himself, but we hire professionals that are into self-development. And that's what I'm seeing in you. Well, okay, that's fine. And there are companies like that. And there are other companies that invest in you. It's good for you to know that. It's absolutely good for you to know that.
If you know, you can make a choice.
Yes.
If you don't know, you're just
guessing. You're just guessing. Yeah.
And if you're really worried, you could ask something like, are you able to share with me where the incumbent in this position is going?
Yeah.
And they might be, they're moving to a different company, to a better role. They might say they're moving to a different place in this company. They're going to take a sabbatical to look after their parents.
Yeah.
Could be anything, but knowing is helpful.
Yeah. And you could also do this with a great deal of care. We talk about in our interviewing series, prefacing questions that you ask in the interview with something to help people understand where you're coming from. And if there's a bit of a pinch associated with it, you soften the blow. Hey, look, I really try really hard to do good due diligence, and I've been very fortunate in my career to work some great places. I hope you don't mind. Can I ask a few questions about what it's like here? Because I've been focusing so much on selling. I'm selling myself. I'm excited. And yet I probably have some holes in my thinking. Mm-hmm. If you ask it that way, people are going to go, oh gosh, no, yeah, please ask away. Anything, tell anything. Now, they don't mean anything. And if the next thing you said was, how good a boss is this guy really? Then no. And you don't want to ask about places 3 levels up, and you don't want to ask when the next promotion is. That's the famous, where do I sit? How much do I get? When's lunch? When can I quit? But you could say, tell me about career paths. You could say to one of your peers, hey, tell me about your career path here. How long have you been in this role? How long when you're a role before? Now, if it's early stages of a warm-up, they've probably been stagnated a little bit. You got to give them credit for that. You could say, one of the things that's important to me is good open communication. How do you guys handle communication around here? In other words, you preface your questions with a statement that is not just benign, but is intelligent. In other words, communication is important. Who's going to argue with the statement communication is important, right? Hey, look, I've been places where there's limited resources and there's a lot of jostling for it, and you have to win. You really have to pitch and win all the time. And yet, you know, you guys have a great reputation. How do you guys handle when there's a conflict around resources? And you'll get a lot. And by the way, folks, you can ask this of several different people. If you have a niggling thought in the back of your head about X, make sure you preface it with a positive or with something that's a reasonable concern for people to have before you ask it. For instance, at some of the places I've been, there's a wide variance of whether or not people get developed or not. And I'm thinking that I'd like to stay here for a long time. And one of the things that I'm hoping for is a company that develops people. I can develop myself and I'd like some help. Can you give me an example of how the boss has developed a particular staff person? Or if you're asking one of your peers, have you ever been developed by one of your bosses? And if so, how? Tell me about that. What kind of training do you get to go to? That kind of stuff. And by the way, folks, there's another way to find out where the incumbent has gone, and we'll share that in a different cast. Can you wrap us up, Wendy?
Sure. So the questions you want to ask yourself are, why would somebody be leaving this job? What risks are there in me leaving my current job? And then a question you want to ask in the interview process when you're close to an offer or after you've got an offer, specific questions about managerial style or things that you're worried about, things that are concerns of yours that you want to have.
Yeah.
The gaps in your knowledge filled out.
Yeah.
I mean, you never want to find yourself like Wile E. Coyote, like you've run over the cliff and actually you thought there was a fantastic job the other side of the cliff and actually there's nothing but air.
Yeah.
And even if you're overdue for a move, and looking at the opportunities that have started to come up, and you're thinking, it's time for me, it still might not be time because the risk is so much higher right now. And just be smart and make sure there's a bridge. You know, not Wile E. Coyote, but Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah. Folks, we want you to make the move if the move is right for you. We just don't want you to be surprised when you discover you thought it was right, but it wasn't. Okay. Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, everyone.
That's it, everybody. Thanks for listening this week. Come back next week. See you then.